Every month we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of the region. Stories of Southern Oregon by that name are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, SODA, at the Hannon Library at Southern Oregon University. Maureen Flanagan Battistella, welcome back.
Thank you. Hello.
Good to have you. This month, Maureen visits with Chris Hardy of Hardy Seeds, who played a major part in Jackson County adopting Oregon's only county ordinance banning genetically modified crops back in 2014. Chris, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Morning, Jeffrey.
Good to have you here. So talk first about what it is you do at Hardy Seeds.
We grow a lot of seed diversity. We grow a lot of vegetables, herbs, grains, legumes, perennials, annuals, biennial seeds, and make those available to people locally and beyond. And we also are working on a grain project that is trialing more than 100 varieties of grains from all over the world, like things like emmer, barley, rice, quinoa, oats, rye.
It really is quite a catalog. I had to scroll down on your website just to get out of the varieties of amaranth. Do you focus on heritage plants?
Most of the varieties that we grow and what you might have seen on our website are varieties that are pre-industrial, heritage varieties, heirloom varieties, varieties that do well in low input, climate adapted, conditions. That's what we're working towards.
So this is a lot of emphasis on heritage crops and things that worked well in the past. I mean, I can guess right there begins the discussion about your opposition to the growing of genetically modified crops.
Yeah, that's right. It just doesn't seem to make sense that we need to charge farmers extra money premium on these seeds when farmers can save these seeds, as they have done for millennia, and replant these seeds every year without having to go back to the company who's making them and selling them and, transforming their genetics.
So for the people who've never gotten very interested or just forgotten, what is the difference between genetic engineering and simple hybridization?
Simple hybridization is a process that's either done by a human crossing a plant intentionally or by naturally crossing a plant by just allowing the bees and the wind to cross the pollen on those plants. Genetic engineering is where you actually take the DNA, you splice it, or you add new DNA to the plant, and or you change that DNA in some way by removing genetics or adding something to the genetics such that it ends up with a similar result. So those are the three, classically, those are the three ways to make the next generation of a plant.
So in genetic engineering, and I know people use GE and GMO rather interchangeably, you're getting, in some cases, genetic material that is not from plants ending up in plants.
Yes. That's recombinant DNA is kind of the old way of doing things, Jeffrey. That's where you take, like, the fish gene and put it into the tomato is the classic one that they talked about doing. Like the new stuff now is like razor blade, cut, splice this, pull this piece of the DNA. This is not what they want because that might lead to a virus infecting the plant. And so they pull that kind of, defective piece of the gene out of the plant. And then they say, oh, well, now this plant can't get the virus. But we know that over time, whether it's a plant, whether it's an insect, whether it's humans, we're seeing this in the case of the virus now that is just like, okay, well, this doesn't work. Let's mutate this direction. And we have seen this with the case of the GMO specifically, where insects are now resistant to the GMO cotton. insects are resistant to the GMO corn. Weeds are resistant to glyphosate, and now we have dicamba resistance and 2,4-D resistance. And so it's on and on and on. We got to use more of these chemicals, as we have found, and that just has major implications for both our water quality and for the future of this planet.
Chris Hardy's our guest in this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. Maureen Flanagan Battistella is back as well as we talk about genetically modified crops. Chris was a major part of the campaign back in May of 2014 to get a Jackson County ordinance passed banning GMO crops. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. How long before that May 2014 vote did you guys begin to organize?
So I walked into a field of GMO sugar beets back in late January of 2012, and then had a meeting of farmers and community organizers, people that just concerned citizens that came together, and those then people were like, well, we need something needs to be done because that's going to lead to this contamination, and my crops are going to be contaminated in this and that, big implications for the local food system and agriculture in the future. And so that's when things began moving forward a couple years, more than 2 years before the May 2014 vote.
And what did you think your prospects were at the beginning with such well-organized opposition?
Well, we didn't know that there was going to be such opposition, but it didn't really matter. What we knew is that something had to be done, because the way things were working out with like little secret plots of genetically engineered plants, putting pollen up into the air was not the flavor of what we saw the future of the valley here.
Maureen, come on in here, because I wanted to ask you about there's obviously so much stuff that went along. I mean, just trying to refresh my own memory about the 2014 campaign, it just reminded me of how many different facets there were. You could probably make a huge archive just out of this campaign alone in the Southern Oregon Digital Archive.
Yeah, we've, thanks to Chris Hardy and a number of others like Katie Farrell, and Elise Higley out in Josephine, we've collected quite a bit of material related to the campaign, and it really was a grassroots campaign from all over the valley. But I do have some questions. You speak of sugar beets, Chris. Was that the only crop that was actually grown? And that was grown for seed for certain companies, right?
Yes, the sugar beets, the Swiss multinational Syngenta, who's since been purchased, since the 2014 vote, has been purchased by ChemChina. And so those two companies merged. That was the sugar beet that they were growing here, Roundup Ready glyphosate tolerant sugar beet. There was also genetically engineered corn and genetically engineered alfalfa being grown in Southern Oregon in the Rogue Valley. And those were being grown mostly by local parties, but local farmers. But the sugar beet was specifically being tested and grown. And we understand that was the foundation of the testing for the sugar beets, for the global sugar beet production.
Hang on a second, Maureen, because I know it's interesting, Chris, because I noticed on your catalog, you actually sell seeds for sugar beets, but this is a world apart from those.
Yeah, we do have a sugar beet that is open pollinated. It has been tested free of genetically engineered pollen, and we're really proud to be growing that. That was originally introduced from a seed grower, plant breeder, Jonathan Spiro of Lupine Knoll Farm up in the Applegate. And he gave us that seed before he passed away here. Awesome, amazing seed saver, brilliant man, plant corn breeder. Sweet corn was his passion, but we have that seed available here in Southern Oregon.
Okay, Maureen, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, some farmers have talked to me about their loss of income because they weren't allowed to, were no longer allowed to grow seed crops here. Can you tell me about how organic farmers, for example, were able to develop revenue streams by virtue of this ban?
Yes, we had, by contract, you're only allowed to grow sugar beet, anything from the sugar beet or the beet family, which includes Swiss chard and table beets and sugar beets. If in most cases, you need to know affirmatively that within 5 miles, sometimes 10 miles, that you have no GMO or genetically engineered sugar beets. They don't make genetically engineered table beets or Swiss chard, but they're all of the same family. And so you have to know beyond a doubt that there is no GMO crop being grown nearby. We have cut that off at the corner and just said that's not what we want to do here in Southern Oregon as far as agriculture and food. And so that crop has been banned here and is not allowed legally to be produced. So now, if you do end up with any contamination, so-called contamination, it would just be crossing of Swiss chard with your beets, which doesn't make it illegal to produce like it would have if you had a plant technology agreement, something that is legally makes it against the law for you to save those seeds if you get those GMO seeds in your own seed stock that you're growing for contract. So that has been a plus to move things in that way.
All right, but otherwise, there was a chance that you would have to give up the seeds that grew on your own property?
Like what we had to do. We had to destroy our Swiss chard crop contract. That was what the seed company told us that we had produced Swiss chard for.
Chris Hardy's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's Stories of Southern Oregon. So you know Maureen Flanagan Battistella is with us as well. We're talking about Chris's role in passage of anti-GMO crop ordinance in Jackson County in May of 2014. If you got some questions or comments of your own, join in. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. There were legal challenges. Well, let me step back a bit because Jackson County got to have its vote after the Oregon legislature said there can be no local GMO ordinances. So this vote was essentially grandfathered in. This is the only county in Oregon with a non-GMO crop ordinance, and there were challenges to the ordinance after it got passed. Talk about what happened there.
After Jackson County passed the ballot initiative in May of 2014, it was later that year, right after the failure by 0.01%, 875 votes out of 1.5 million votes in the state of Oregon, the labeling GMOs, GMO foods, failed by such a small margin, but it was 10 days later after that statewide ballot initiative failed that we were sued, and Monsanto stepped forward pretty quickly thereafter and said, we're the ones that are moving this ahead and supporting the farmers, that the two alfalfa growers to sue the county because you shouldn't be able to tell another farmer what they do on their property. And it took about a year later before we were complete, and the hundreds of farmers that came together and supported the ballot initiative were successful at stopping the largest multinational chemical company on the planet to be able to uphold the ballot initiative banning genetically engineered crops, the only county in the state of Oregon to do so.
Now, Josephine County did have its vote after this, but it was already beyond that window that the legislature provided for, correct?
Yes. So Josephine County was sued a couple of months later, and they failed at their effort to uphold the county ballot initiative because the state had passed a preemption, which was done maybe a year or so prior to the ballot initiative. Our May 2014 vote in both Jackson and Josephine County. And so when that statewide law went into effect, that essentially excluded Josephine County but included Jackson County simply based on the fact we had the political wherewithal to pull that together. And so when it came to the lawsuit against Josephine County, Josephine County was overturned and was not allowed to enforce their ballot initiative banning genetically engineered crops. However, they could keep it on the books, according to the lawsuit. And in the event that the state ever has mercy, so to speak, to allow the people of Josephine County the right to be able to protect local agriculture.
So in Jackson County, has there been some grandfathering arising out of lawsuits? I mean, are some people still allowed to grow genetically modified crops, or has that finally passed away?
In Oregon?
No, in Jackson County.
In Jackson. No, Jackson County is 100%. You cannot grow genetically engineered plants, seeds, crops here in the county.
Mm-hmm. So talk about, aside from GMO, just talk about being in the business of farming this year in particular with so little water. I've been looking at the irrigation ditch near my house, cracked dry since early August.
Yeah. So we lost probably three quarters of all of our crops this year due to the drought. We knew TID was going to get shut off at some point. They were saying, like, possibly as early as July, but our water canal was off of Neal Creek, south of Ashland, and I think as a consequence, what we're thinking as a consequence of the TID getting shut off is that it dried up a lot of other creeks and water sources, and so we ran out of water right around the middle of July. And we were only getting water every other week, and it was difficult, like, to get water down our ditch.
Yeah,
where the clay was expanding, and you could stick a whole foot down into the crack of the earth that was so dry it had opened up, and the water would just disappear.
Wow. So, yeah, three quarters of the crops gone with. I fully understand that. Okay. So Chris Hardy from Hardy Seeds, instrumental with the passage of Jackson County's non-GMO ordinance in May of 2014. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange. Maureen Flanagan Battistella is the curator and collector of Stories of Southern Oregon. Always good to have you on.
Thank you.